is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, to comment on what we know so far about the extraction of American citizens and those who are regarded in severe risk, who have worked with the U.S. or with other friends of the U.S. over the years and are now not likely to survive a Taliban takeover of the country and darkness visible. Jeff, it's fog of war. So I'm going to go to the headlines that we have so you can comment on where we are since the story is moving. We know there's a deadline, a timeline, and the clock is counting down. We have this from the Wall Street Journal within these hours. CIA, U.S. troops conduct missions outside Kabul airport to extract Americans. Subhead, risky operations include helicopter lifts as evacuation window closes. Detail, the CIA has launched clandestine operations to rescue Americans in and outside of Kabul in recent days, according to U.S. and other officials. Those operations are using American military helicopters, but under the operation and control of the CIA, a typical arrangement in such operations. This is the first I read of a confirmation of something we've heard rumored for days. I believe the British early on were talking about extracting people from outside Kabul. And therein lies a challenge for me, Jeff. We've been reporting on the mess at the airport, but Kandahar, Ghazni City, Herat, Mazar-e Sharif, these are major centers of development over these last 20 years with NGOs, contractors, security from around the world. We don't know anything about them. Good evening to you, Jeff.
Good evening to you, John. You're exactly right. We don't know anything about them in terms of obviously two categories of people. One, American citizens or third world nationals, citizens of Great Britain, Germany, France, et cetera, that might still be behind. Or those Afghans that work for us or some of our allies. And as the speed of the Taliban advance was so quick, and coming to Kabul and the collapse of Kabul, it's, you know, impossible not to believe that some of these people were swept up in that and now are isolated at some great distance from Kabul, making it virtually impossible for them to get to Kabul and then run this gauntlet of crowds and the Taliban to get physically to the airport. But identifying where those people are exactly and then conducting an operation to rescue them in large numbers is obviously highly risky. Not only risky in terms of that operation failing or ending up in a confrontation with the Taliban or someone else, but the possibility that that type of an operation could result in confrontation with the Taliban, which then might compromise or put at risk this massive airlift that's coming out of the airport itself.
Jeff, you've visited Afghanistan. I've only seen pictures from the air. The borders, are they porous? Is there a way to go overland to get out if you're, say, in Jalalabad or in Kandahar? Can you get to Pakistan without the U.S. assistance?
Yeah, you can get there on the ground. The Taliban, of course, in making this offensive strategically took control of the road networks and the border checkpoints. The other thing that's occurred over the last number of years is the Pakistanis constructed a fence line, not unlike we did with Mexico, that is some 2,600 kilometers long. And along that border, and I've actually been with those Pakistani border guards, they construct security on the border. That being said, this is very, very porous. And don't forget, as far as the Taliban and the Pashtuns, the ethnic group the Taliban largely comes from, they see Pashtuns as being a nation that stretches across Afghanistan into Pakistan. There are more Pashtuns, by the way, in Pakistan than in Afghanistan. And the border, the so-called Durand Line, drawn by Europeans, is something the Pashtuns as an ethnic group have never acknowledged and moved back and forth freely. And we know the Taliban did that with some effect, going back into Pakistan to rest, recuperate, and particularly going back into Pakistan in the wintertime and then coming across those borders through the mountains to re-enter Afghanistan for the spring offensive. As a consequence, and I've been in touch with Pakistani friends in the last week, they are very, very concerned about a massive on-the-ground refugee flow moving into Pakistan. Even before this began, there were 1.5 million Afghan refugees on Pakistani soil.
Headlines in London are rough, and the one that was just remade at the London Telegraph, "I served you, but you don't care." This is said to be a remark by an Afghan interpreter stuck in a putrid ditch begging for UK's help. UK's help. Hundreds of would-be refugees are queuing in a rancid moat filled with human waste, hoping soldiers will lift them into the airport. This is one snapshot from the London Telegraph. There's no way to summarize what's going on, Jeff. We have different countries trying to get people out, aircraft rotating in all the time, leaving as fast as they can to come back and ferry more. So right now, can we say that the fog of war has descended, and with the countdown underway, the next priority is to get the security forces out, to get out the UK, the German, the Azerbaijan, the Turkish, the French, all of the security forces? They have to be coming out whether or not they brought out the people who are vulnerable. Is that correct, Jeff?
It's very correct. The British leadership has said they will be evacuating people right up to the very end, but obviously that includes their security forces. The French have said that they will complete the evacuation of French nationals by this Thursday. But we've already been told there's been somewhat of a reduction. We don't know how many of U.S. military forces as that withdrawal, you rightly point out, John, begins. And the Pentagon had pressured the president that he had to make a decision as of yesterday if 31 August was still going to be the deadline, so they could begin that retrograde movement. Coordinated with allies there at the airport, they will largely use their military airlift or other aircraft to get their folks out. We will use ours. But over time, they've got to shrink that security envelope that now encompasses the entire airport to a smaller and smaller piece until you get down to that last detachment of Americans and that very last soldier who gets on that very last airplane and ends this chapter called the longest war, the war in Afghanistan.
There's a lot of equipment on the ground in the Kabul airport area and throughout the country. What happens to the equipment, Jeff? Do we leave it to the Taliban?
We abandoned an awful lot of equipment at Bagram, many of the MRAP, these very large anti-mine vehicles, which are so heavy, only one or two max can fly out in a C-17 aircraft. They can't be moved out by ground now because the Taliban controls all the road networks. But any of the helicopters you see in video, Blackhawks, Apaches, et cetera, they all arrived. They were flown in a cargo aircraft. Their ranges are too short to fly out, and the territory would mean you'd have to fly over Pakistani territory. Some of the larger helicopters, some of the 47 CH-53s, if there are any there, can be aerial refueled if you can get a refueler in close enough to refuel them and you don't have to move out over the Indian Ocean. But you're going to have two options. Either use cargo aircraft like C-5A to package up those aircraft, Humvees, MRAPs, any of the heavier vehicles you've got there to fly out, destroy them on the runway, or leave them for the Taliban.
Panjshir Valley, to the north of Kabul, about 80 miles, I'm told, that's all, until maybe it's kilometers. I go back and forth with the European reporting. But in any event, it's very close to Kabul. At the same time, it's the spot, the geography that's said to be built for resistance movement. This was Massoud's headquarters before he was assassinated by Al-Qaeda the day before the attack on the U.S. His son, Ahmed Massoud, is now leading what is very difficult to read, a resistance force in the Panjshir Valley, but without equipment, without cooperation, coordination, and they don't have a border to cross. They're isolated within Afghanistan. The one detail I've learned here is that Panjshir Valley is dominated by Tajiks. These are not Pashtuns. These are Tajiks who have at least an origin story with Tajikistan. And I've learned that Tajikistan, of all the Central Asian countries, is adamantly opposed to the Taliban and is working close with Russia. So what do you make of these headlines about the National Resistance Front of Afghanistan headed by Massoud? Is it a novelty at the end of the conflict, or is this the beginning of the resistance all over, Jeff?
I think it's a little bit too soon to tell, John, but you're right. The name Massoud rings very loudly up in the northern part of Afghanistan amongst the Tajik population. And Ahmed Shah Massoud, his father, the so-called Lion of the Panjshir, was the head of the Northern Alliance, which was predominantly Tajik, supported by the Tajiks, by the Russians and others, that really resisted the Taliban until we arrived in 2001. And they really provided the heavy ground infantry for our air support in taking down the Taliban when we arrived back in 2001. We know that he has gathered a certain amount of the remnants of the Afghan army, some of the Afghan commando units, a significant supply of ammunition and weapons, and has announced that he will resist from the Panjshir Valley. He has been joined there by the former vice president of Afghanistan, Saleh, who has called himself president now that President Ghani has fled the country. But they are isolated by the Taliban. They don't have that border which his father had to bring in supplies and ammunition. It's unclear right now because many of the countries, Chinese, POCs, and others are kind of hedging their bets whether or not they'll get any support externally right now. And he just had a op-ed published in the Washington Post a few days ago requesting that type of assistance. At this moment, too soon to tell, I think. The Taliban has said they're going to galvanize their forces and snuff out this last vestige of resistance. But it seems right now, at least, Massoud and the Tajiks in the Panjshir Valley are preparing for a defense and ultimately some kind of a rebellion, insurgency, hit-and-run type tactics to try to turn the tables on the Taliban.
The extraction from Kabul International Airport, Hamid Karzai International Airport, continues. It's fog of war. There's no clarity whatsoever, but the clock is running. So we're going to turn to the larger regional story of how the tragedy in Kabul, how the darkness of Afghanistan is going to affect relations in the great game, it was called once upon a time, of Central Asia. Jeff McCausland, CBS News. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.